Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Sankofa Radio, where we travel through the past before we stop in the present on our journey into the future. I'm your host, Ascari Donso, and today we're going to be talking about integration. Is it racist? Also, my man going to call in today, Ishmael Shabazz, a good friend of mine. I've been doing time with him for a while. Been knowing him for a long time. He's a great guy, very intelligent. Or offer a lot, I think it's a real treat for people. It's customary that we start off every show with a dedication. Today I'd like to dedicate the show to Stanley Tucky Williams, leader of the Crips, executed for murder, but the brother changed his life, became Pan-African, wrote a lot of books, won the Nobel Peace Prize, and was a staunch activist for black human rights. He also wanted to reform the gangster mind and turn it into the revolutionary mind. And so today we want to give a shout out and a dedication to my man Stanley Tucky Williams, an example of reform, what one can do when they want to redeem themselves, the epitome of redemption. So first and foremost, I want to ask the question, is my man Ishmael online? Okay. Well, is integration racist? We come to this topic today off a report written by the University of Virginia. In the report, they cite a few numbers talking about racial segregation, residential segregation in 2014 here in the state of Virginia. What they're highlighting is what they call, you know, high poverty census tracts, which are densely populated areas of poor people who are poor in one area, in one region. Okay, and so in this report, what they do, they show essentially, based on region and locality, what cities, you know, have the highest concentration of poverty tracts by racial demographic. And what they show is that places like Richmond, Newport News, Suffolk, Virginia Beach, Norfolk, they all have highly densely high census poverty tracts. And so we see residential segregation all throughout Virginia. Now, what is the cause of this? Right? So according to the report, the cause of this is economics, low income. And so people with low income obviously live together in housing projects, Section 8 housing and low-income housing. And these areas are densely populated, and these areas typically get zoned in a certain way so that commercial business can't come into these areas. And because these people typically have a history of not voting and participating in a democratic process, they're unable to influence legislation and ordinances when it comes to how areas are going to be zoned. And we'll be talking about zoning. We're just talking about land use planning, you know. A zoning is just, you know, how it is that a city wants to use the land in particular area. So in this area where they allow for high-rise, low-income housing apartments, they don't allow for there to be a lot of commerce and commercial building, you know what I mean? And so these things lead to densely high poverty areas where there's not a whole lot of, you know, economic activity, and the lack of economic activity, you know, causes people to be in desperate situations. And the areas where there is high economic activity, where there is decent incomes, these people typically go to the same legislatures and get them to zone their areas in a certain way so that the property values can stay high and so that they can capitalize on their investment, which is their property. You know, and so they don't want what they consider to be blights to come into their areas, which are poor people, whether it be their schools, whether it be housing. And this is why you don't see a lot of public housing, Section 8 housing, in areas where there's white, middle, and upper-middle-class people. They could easily put, you know, Section 8 housing in these neighborhoods if they wanted to integrate these neighborhoods. I want to go into a different subject for a minute, which is schooling. Because in Virginia, there's been an increase in segregation of the schools from 89 to 2010. What we see is a resegregating of the schools. And the resegregation of the schools, once again, is the result of economic inequality. And where you see the most resegregation of schools is in places like Richmond City, Suffolk, Newport News, Hampton, Norfolk, Portsmouth. And what's happening in these resegregated schools is you have black kids who are having to deal with limited resources. You know, it's just segregation all over again. I mean, what you get is you got kids in what they call apartheid schools, which apartheid schools are just schools where there's a high level of African Americans, and majority of the people enrolled in the school are low income or impoverished. We're talking about easily 75-80%, and there's just not a lot of academic achievement, and the reason being for all types of social factors. But what's concerning about it is when Brown versus Board of Education came out in 1955, the idea was that desegregating the schools would give blacks specifically equal access to education, educational opportunities, resource opportunities. And so they brought through court order. A lot of southern states in particular were forced to have to integrate their schools. They were forced to have to accommodate African-Americans in a way that, you know, allowed them to have access to the school. So what that means is, let's say, for example, a black kid lived across town, you know what I'm saying, from an integrated school. You know, how was he going to get there? But he had to bus them. They had to take buses and go into these black neighborhoods, these poor neighborhoods, and take the kids over to the integrated schools. And this is through court order. It was mandated. You know what I mean? Richard Nixon started a federal program where busing became something that was an issue throughout the country. Even northern states had to bus. And what this did was it gave black kids access to integrated schools. Now, we talked a little bit last week, me and my man Sunday Hunter. I don't want to get too far off track. Everybody wasn't trying to integrate. Some schools, some kids in the schools, really, they just wanted equal access to resources. So everybody doesn't see this as being successful. But where I'm going with this, why this is important, is when you begin to integrate the schools, what happens is you see a difference in the treatment and the education of the child. For example, if you got a black kid, right? We got black kids. 1960s, 1950s, 1940s, going to segregated schools, they're being taught by black teachers. And these black teachers are telling them, you know, they can be anything they want, they can achieve anything they want. And they're teaching them curriculums about black heroes. They're teaching them about what it means to be black in America. So they're learning what it means to be black in the context of white America. What does that mean to be black in white America? You're getting that example. You're getting that education, and it's arming you with the perspective that allows you to be able to respond to the world in a healthy way. Okay, I'm black, you know what I'm saying? I live in America. America is anti-black. I know this early, so I know I have to respond in a certain way in order to be successful. In order for me to be able to achieve, I have to know that I'm going to have to work twice as hard. I know that, you know, there's going to be people trying to knock me down. I know there's going to be certain areas I'm going to be able to go into. You get this early, and so you can prepare yourself, you know what I'm saying? But what happens when we integrate the schools is now black kids are going to schools with white teachers who don't want them there, who see them as, you know, having innate issues that make them more apt to misbehaving. They have innate attitudes, racial attitudes, that make them believe that the black child isn't as intelligent. They have innate attitudes and racist beliefs, and that black child is lazy. And so what happens is now there's a different quality of education that the black child is receiving. So this is what we want to talk about, what I want to talk about today, with the question being posed, is integration racist? I read an article recently where a kid in New York, he was 5 years old in elementary school. He did a report for Black History Month on Malcolm X. And the teacher, who was a white woman, the kid is a black kid, 5 years old, and his white teacher told him that he needed to go do a report on Martin Luther King because Martin Luther King, quote, did it the right way. Now, This is integration. This is integrated curriculum, right? The idea that Martin Luther King did it the right way and Malcolm X did it the wrong way is a racist notion in and of itself. There is a right way or a wrong way for one to achieve his human rights, his civil rights, his dignity, which in and of itself is racist, because what you have is you have a white woman controlling or dictating to this black child the perception of what is right and what is wrong and trying to achieve your civil rights, civil liberties, and human rights. This is something that happens all of the time. We see it in the workplace. Black women having to dress a certain way, fashion their hair in a certain way, in order to be accepted in certain work environments. What is considered to be acceptable based on cultural norms, based on cultural aesthetics, okay? When you go to housing, you know, whether or not, you know, an area, right, you have access to an area or a loan, you know, when you go into the bank, preconceived notions about your ability to pay for the mortgage. All of these things are the result of integration, right? Integration is essentially supposed to be about access to equal opportunities, but are the opportunities equal when the dominant culture set the limitations based on cultural norms, their cultural norms? So if they say, yo, this is what beauty is, this is what an acceptable appearance is, this is what isn't an acceptable appearance, naughty hair, you're not combing your hair naughty, you don't look presentable. Who's determining this? Determining that my naughty hair is not presentable when I go to this job. I want to do, take a quick break. Is my man Ishmael on the phone? Ishmael. Okay, so still waiting on Ishmael to call. That should be any second. So this is how integration works. Another thing is we have to begin to question in a society where you have overwhelmingly a large amount of states where there really isn't any black representation. Places like Montana, Iowa, North Dakota, South Dakota, Maine, Vermont. We're talking about places where there's less than 1% of the population is black. And the question is, how do these people who vote, who determine nationwide policy, who it is that gets elected into the office of the president, how it is that policy is shaped throughout the country with the representatives they put in office from their state who goes to Washington and determines policy for the country. You know, how do these people understand black culture, black plight, black ethos? How do they understand what's outside of the way that it's propagandized to them through the media? And this is what I would like to kind of pose today. How does that affect the perception of someone who never has an actual experience with you, but only a sort of virtual experience? What I mean is this. If you're a white person in Montana, and the only time you see blacks is when you watch Thank God It's Thursday on ABC, and you're watching Kerry Washington, or you're watching How to Get Away with Murder, this is the only time you experience blackness, or blackish, or you watch BET and you watch Martin, or you go to some video show, or you don't experience blacks on social media when you go to YouTube or Facebook or Twitter. How does that affect you psychologically? How does that affect your perception of you know, black people and your relationship to black people? Do you feel like you know, you're not racist? You know, because you look at Kerry Washington and you feel like, well, I don't think that I'm racist. You know, I experience black. I see blacks on TV all the time. Does it affect you psychologically, give you the false notion that you are somehow participating in integration? So this is the question. This is the question we need to begin to ask, you know, the majority of white Americans in these areas aren't having contact with blacks, Hispanics, Asians, and yet they're having to send people to represent their state in the political arena who are dictating the agenda for the rest of the country. And there are areas of people who are being affected by this. It's sort of the same thing happening here in the state of Virginia. A report came out recently, man, that said overwhelmingly throughout the state, the citizens of Virginia would like to see parole abolished. Reinstated. Parole was abolished in 1995. We talk about that often. But yet, lawmakers here are overwhelmingly Republican, have basically put their foot in the ground and said, we are not reinstituting parole in Virginia. We are not doing it. What happens is you have so many regions, so many small rural counties in Southwest Virginia, Central Virginia, where the representatives are going to Richmond and they're sticking their heels in the ground and they're refusing to even entertain the idea of reforming the criminal justice system. Yet the guys who are in the prison system are from areas like Richmond and Lynchburg and Norfolk and Portsmouth, and yet their representatives are trying to reinstate parole. So what you have is you have a representation in the politics, which is based on race, because this is integration. It's based on race, where they're refusing to reinstitute parole, although the people who will be most affected by it aren't in their district. People in Buckingham County, people in Lee County, people in Wise County, you know, the guys in here aren't going back to those areas, yet those are the areas that's blocking through their representation the reinstituting of parole. And this is what happens when you have what I like to call virtual integration, where people only experience integration virtually, whether it's through social media, whether it's through radio, or whether it's through the medium of the television. Right, no actual experience with black people, no actual experience with Hispanic people, and so they don't understand us culturally. The only thing they know is the stereotypes that are associated with our race. Another aspect to that is the fact that these regions profit off incarceration. And this, again, is racist. This, again, is how integration works, right? So integration gives the perception that you know, everybody has equal opportunity, that things aren't being done strictly on a discriminatory basis, that we're not, you know, giving opportunity or an advantage or an edge to a particular group based on race. But we know, in fact, that this is true even with who receives the benefits from Virginia's institutions of punishment, right? So what do I mean? Well, let's look at southeastern Virginia. You know, you had James River Prison in the Tidewater area. You had Southampton in Southampton County. You have Powhatan close to the Richmond area. These three prisons, you had Brunswick. These are four prisons that were closed in the last 10 years, four prisons that were closed in the last year. And you have to keep in mind that a prison to operate probably has appropriated to its budget anywhere between $10 to $15 million annually. And the most of the money that's appropriated to the prison goes to salary. So what we're talking about is money that's going to people who's working in the prison, who takes that money back out into the local area and pays for goods and services. They buy houses, they buy cars, they buy food, they buy all types of products. So this enhances the economic activity in a region. So you got a place like Brunswick, you got a place like Southampton, you got a place like James River, Powhatan. These are primarily black areas. These are black workers. You got a staff that's made up easily of 95% African-American. These people are getting paid anywhere between $25,000 and $60,000 a year, depending on your class situation within the prison, you know, the division of labor, if you're a SAT, you're a sergeant, or if you're a captain or lieutenant or warden, whatever. Now, these jobs are taken away. Take away these jobs, which is, you know, easily $7, $8 million worth of income taken away from that area, and you take it and you build prisons in Southwest Virginia, white regions, right? So you got Green Rock, you got River North, you got Walnut Ridge and Red Onion, you have Pocahontas. These are prisons that were built in place of the prisons that were closed down in primarily white areas. These prisons have white guards, white staff. These prisons were built in the last 10 years. So what you see is a redistribution of the income through the institution of punishment, the prison in Virginia. And this is integration. This is integration, right? Because what you have is you have the perception that, you know, there's equal opportunity and equal access when it's not actually happening. So follow me on this, because this is what we're talking about. Integration at its core, right, is about not just bringing a minority group into a majority, dominant majority culture, but what it's supposed to do is supposed to be about giving giving a minority group equal access, equal opportunity, and also having a cultural inclusion into the dominant mainstream culture. But this doesn't happen, right? And this isn't happening, okay? But when we say integration, we're specifically trying to qualify it. So what would be opposed to it in order to understand that? Segregation, right? The alienation of a group, the isolation of a group, okay? And what we're talking about now, pretty much when we're talking about the segregation, we're talking about something that was done through the law. Desegregation had to happen through the law, and this happened. Desegregation happened, but integration never really happened. And that's what I'm trying to qualify and distinguish for you today. Desegregation versus integration. Desegregation versus integration. Integration is a social dynamic. Desegregation is a legal dynamic, meaning you can have desegregation where people legally aren't being discriminated against. There's no legal authority that allows for you to be set in a whites-only section. There's no legal authority that allows for you to have to reside in a certain area. There's no legal authority that keeps you at a certain school. But this happened socially. And so I would like to pose today that this form of integration is racist. And this is the question that we put on the table. Is it racist? Absolutely. Because you can have desegregation without correct and proper and genuine integration. A genuine integration would include black beauty standards. A black woman can wear dress, an afro. She can wear curls. She can wear twists and be considered beautiful. She could be voluptuous and big and still be considered beautiful. She wouldn't have to conform to certain norms in order to be considered acceptable in the workplace. You know, black men would be able to bring their cultural norms. You know, sure, we're not talking about rocking sagging your pants, but the suit, the idea of the suit, the notion of the suit is very European, the suit being a professional form of garb. Me wearing the suit is not indicative of my ability to perform at the work task, yet it's essential for me in order to be able to get a certain job. Whose norms are these? Whose standards are these? The dreads are considered to be, by the black man, threatening, not proper. You best believe, man, when white employers, business owners, see a black young black male come in who has dreads, he's questioning whether or not he wants this dude on his job. You let me know how many people you know in the United States Congress or the Virginia General Assembly who have dreadlocks. You think that's something that's just a coincidence? I doubt it. And so these things are what is the result of a failed integration. There's no cultural. Let's talk about the impact of that, because the impact of that on black people is we begin to question or ignore, you know what I'm saying, black cultural ways, black ethos. We look at the black cultural way, our norms, that African norms that, you know, have been traditional for us for centuries, millennia, and we begin ourselves to look at those things as if they are not acceptable, ugly. I had a dude tell me, you know, he don't like dreads. He don't like a black woman dress. He like them to keep their hair straight. You know what I'm saying? But that's something that's been ingrained in his subconscious mind, that beauty is associated with straight hair. You know, it's also makes us perceive people who are wearing certain styles as being a certain way. We automatically associate, she got dreads, or she got braids, or, you know, she got kinky twists, you know what I'm saying? She must be a certain type of woman. We do the same thing with black men. Oh, he got dreads, so, you know, he must be a rowdy dude, or, you know, he must be an ethnic dude, whatever the hell that means, or, you know, he looks pretty urban, you know what I mean? So this is what integration does. It associates, right, association, you know what I'm saying, imagery with value, perception, attitude, belief, you know, and this is where you get prejudice. The concept, the idea, the notion of being prejudiced, because we automatically are perceiving that because a person appears a certain way, that they behave a certain way. Okay, so it's sort of like we identify a certain bias. You know what I'm saying? And this is where racial bias comes in with these images. You know what I'm saying? With the association of imagery with behavior, you get bias. So you say, this dude has dreads. You know what I'm saying? More than likely, he's ethnic, he's urban, he's hip-hop, which to me, you know, means that the dude probably, you know, a little rough around the edges. I want to hire this dude. I can foresee it's going to be some problem. Racial bias. That's how racial bias works. I mean, so now what the black dude does, after being rejected from employment several times, he begins to question whether or not he should keep his dreads. You know what I'm saying? And this is integration. This is integration. And this is happening on so many levels, man. Like I say, this is happening in schools. This is happening residential. This is happening economically, which, you know, whether it's employment or getting loans. And so, Ishmael Shabazz, you there, bro? Ishmael. Okay. So we may not get Ishmael today. Moving forward, dealing with the question, is integration racist? I guess what I would like to pose now is, how integration came about in the first place, and what was the response to it historically by African American people? Because that's very important when you think about integration and its development in America. You have to always ask yourself, how do we get there, right? So we know at the end of slavery, let's take it back even further. Really, we think about integration, segregation, which is this opposition. We think about those two things as becoming an issue in the South after slavery. But actually, slavery ended first in the North, and so in Northern territories around the late 18th, early 19th centuries, you begin to see the destruction of the abolition of slavery in a lot of northern states, and they had to figure out, you know, how it is that they were going to regulate newly released African people from plantation and enslavement into freedom, you know what I'm saying? And so did freedom mean citizenship? No, not always. In fact, most times it didn't. And so when you have a bunch of free black people who are able to participate economically and in other forms of your society, but they aren't able to participate politically, you have to ask yourself, how are we going to regulate these black bodies? How are we going to regulate black life? And this was the beginning of a Jim Crow-style segregation system that marginalized black people. This is the example of that begins in the North. So you have places like New York, and you have places like Delaware and Connecticut. These places are creating segregation systems. You got Philadelphia. You know, these places are creating segregation systems in their Jersey, in their states. And, you know, they're basically allowing blacks, you know, to have jobs and participate in the economy again and, you know, own property, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of places, whether or not they could vote, whether or not they could sit on the jury, these things were questionable. You know, these things were questionable. This didn't happen everywhere. Sometimes it was as much as a local thing. Some cities wouldn't allow it, some localities would allow it, some wouldn't. Oh, man. So we're running out of time. I got 90 seconds. I'm going to take this last 90 seconds to, I hope everybody got something out of this show. I'm going to take the last 90 seconds, man, to say free all political prisoners, man. We failed on the fish ban. We'll be keeping it moving. Freedom ain't free. We banging, me and my support team, trying to get me out of prison. Hit me up on the Scary Dinosaur, man. Show me some love. Let me know if you want to help, if you can help. Virginia Prisons for Racial Justice is still a movement. Virginians for Better Nutrition is still a movement. Go to them pages on Facebook. If you want to help, go to Scary Dinosaur, man. We need you. We're trying to bang on mass incarceration in Virginia. We need more people to get involved. Mass incarceration impacts your life. Your Uhuru Hotel. Go back to the beginning, man, to understand the present. You know what I'm saying? That's Sankofa. Yo, Rome.